Houston. It's Friday, and thanks for tuning in to the Houston Indie Media Show. Tonight, we will bring you an update on the growing struggle against the proposed anti-feeding ordinance. Also, a special conversation with Professor Sandra Soto, a year and a half out from the controversial comments taking on Arizona's anti-immigrant legislation that thrust her into the national spotlight. And also, we're going to take a look at Houston's reaction to the Trayvon Martin murder.
All right. Professor Sandra Soto was thrust into the national spotlight after taking on what was then new legislation in Arizona that opponents felt directly attacked both immigrants and ethnic studies programs. While Arizona continues to be ground zero in many ways for the ongoing national debate, Professor Soto sat down with Houston's Indie Media's Rachel Clark to reflect on her controversial commencement speech comments, her work, and her Houston roots.
Tucson specifically, in the state of Arizona more generally. One of the reasons that this is a special talk for me is that I'm from Houston. I open up my talk by acknowledging that this is the place where, as a child, I learned from my parents the importance of activism. They were very involved when I was a child with various social justice movements, many of them coming out of the University of Houston. And I actually would go on after high school to start college at the University of Houston. Those were really important years for me because I cut my teeth in Mexican-American studies classrooms. So the center, what's now called the Center for Mexican-American Studies at the University of Houston, has been a very important space of intellectual exchange and social justice activism for not just myself, but other Chicanas and Chicanos who are from Houston and who have gone on to either become academics or activists in some way, shape, or form. So it's really great to be back here.
And you're currently an associate professor of gender and women's studies at the University of Arizona in Tucson with a focus on ethnic and third world literature. Talk about some of your research and some of your publications, like, for example, your 2010 publication, Reading Chicana Like a Queer.
So that was a book that was based on my dissertation. I focused my work as a graduate student in ethnic and third world literature. What my first book does is to challenge some of the sexism and homophobia in Chicano studies, specifically Chicano literary studies. So even though I've been active in Tucson to defend Mexican-American studies against the attacks that have debilitated Mexican-American studies in K-12, I'm also equally invested in asking us to think about ways that we need to improve the curriculum of Mexican-American Chicano studies. And so in my first book, that's part of the work that I'm trying to do, is to think about the silencing of, say, Chicana queers in various canons, right, on syllabi, who gets published in the field, those sorts of things. And recently, since the spring of 2010, I've also been writing quite a bit about the political conjuncture in Arizona. So not just HB 2281, which is the ethnic studies law, but also SB 1070, the anti-illegal immigrant law.
Given the reality, I know you just mentioned some of the most recent legislation, that Arizona in a lot of ways is kind of ground zero for the current national debate about immigration and ethnic studies. Take us through your decision back in 2010 when you were getting ready to make that graduation speech, criticizing what at that time was new legislation, the SB 1070, that has since become a blueprint for other states like Alabama.
Well, that was a difficult decision. The decision about what to include in my convocation address. When the dean of the School of Social and Behavioral Sciences first invited me to give the convocation address, the governor at that time, Governor Brewer, had not yet signed into law SB 1070 or HB 2281. So when I accepted the invitation to deliver the speech,
I didn't have any idea that I would be needing to, first of all, decide whether to address those issues at all, and second of all, what it would mean for me and for, you know, for others to do that work in the convocation address. But in April and May of 2010, the governor did sign those two pieces of legislation, and I had to decide whether to address what that meant for the state of Arizona in my convocation address. I talked to a lot of people about it, a lot of colleagues and friends about how they felt about the decision I was confronted with and how they would handle it. And I finally decided to include some commentary about SB 1070 and 2281. The speech is not a radical speech. It's fairly tame.
But it is our civic responsibility to have educated, well-informed, and non-hysterical debate, and to develop solutions that are fundamentally respectful of human and civil rights.
The larger context of the speech is a much more traditional graduation speech about, you know, go forth and do great things for the country.
What we so desperately need, and yes, this does put the class of 2010 at a particular crossroads, is for you to bring every critical thinking skill at your disposal and then some more, to bring all of the substantive knowledge of history, diverse cultures and societies, ethics and politics, bring all of these to the table.
And of course, you had to understand that that was maybe a little controversial, the comments you made, but were you at all surprised to the amount of the impact or the way it thrust you into the national spotlight?
Sure. Sure. I didn't anticipate that the audience and graduates, I think it's from where I stood on the stage that day of the graduation as I was delivering the speech, it seemed to me that a lot of the heckling came from the family members of the graduates, so they were up on the sides, not on the Coliseum.
The new Arizona law, generally known as SB 1070, is considered the strictest anti-immigrant legislation in the country, and is explicitly intended to drive immigrants out of the state.
That's right. This is America.
What I didn't think about, but I sometimes think about now, is that there probably were a lot of people with guns in the convention center, no security. So I became worried as I was delivering the speech about what I could see were fights, not fist fights. I don't think there were any fist fights, but really angry yelling back and forth between people in the arena.
Signed HB 2281. Yay! To eliminate any ethnic studies class from public and charter schools of Arizona. As I held hands with middle and high school students who formed a human chain around TUSD headquarters this past Wednesday to protest this law, the children tirelessly chanted, "Our education is under attack. What do we do?"
And how has your life changed a year and a half away from those comments in May of 2010?
Well, things have settled down a lot. For about 6 months, I would say, after the address, the convocation address, so from May 2010, pretty much through that the end of 2010, I was receiving a lot of emails expressing a lot of support of the speech, a lot of emails that were hate emails, that was probably the most disruptive. I lost control. There were just hundreds. I lost control of my email there for a little while. Yeah, but things now are back to normal.
Did you ever feel personally threatened or fearful for your safety or the safety of your partner?
Sure. Yeah.
There were people who came to my office on campus and said they weren't leaving until I would meet with them. What did happen is that the speech just so well, because it was a graduation speech, it came at the very end of the semester. Classes were already over by May 14th, which is when the speech was. So people who came to my office were coming to my office during summer months when I wasn't there anyway. And it just so happened that I had a sabbatical for that next academic school year, 2010 to 2011. And that turned out to be a really great thing.
But that wasn't planned.
That was planned.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I had a sabbatical coming up.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't something that was at all based
no.
on a fear-based decision.
No,
it was something
no.
that was already there. Okay.
And the thing I, just to say one more thing about your question, the thing that I worried about is the chilling effect that the response to the speech would have on other people's decisions about whether to speak up for social justice in the state of Arizona. That's one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot. What are the wider consequences, not just for me, but for other progressives in the state of Arizona? Would they be afraid to speak up?
And one group that hasn't been afraid, although they weren't from Arizona, were the Libro Traficantes. I'm sure you've heard of them.
Yes.
They went from Texas to Arizona this last week bringing banned books. What do you think about that?
We're so heartened by that project. It's such a creative and vibrant way to call attention to the removal of the very dramatic removal of books from Mexican American Studies classrooms in Tucson. And so anytime we hear of people outside of the state of Arizona doing work to push back against what's going on in Arizona, it's very heartening. It's very important to us because in the state of Arizona, it's very conservative. It's very easy to feel like you're in the minority if you're progressive. So it's very important for us to see and hear of other people speaking out. And I really like the way that Libro Traficante put their project together.
And, of course, Chicano minority and Mexican-American studies programs continue to be under attack in Arizona. What's the current climate, for example, where you're at the University of Arizona or in your department?
Thus far, the attacks on ethnic studies in the state of Arizona have been at the K-12 level. Although there are many people in the state of Arizona who would like for the university level classrooms to likewise be surveilled. In fact, HB 2281 actually has a very long history, and there were similar types of legislation that preceded HB 2281 but didn't pass through the legislature or make it to the governor's desk. And one of those pieces of legislation is called SB 1108. It's a piece of legislation that was sponsored by Russell Pierce in 2008, and it would have not only done what HB 2281 has done, but also extended the reach to university campuses in the state, as well as community college campuses as well.
What's the morale, do you think, of students in minority studies programs?
That's a good question. HB 2281 has in some ways backfired. The morale of students students are very angry about their programs being under attack, and they're very vocal, and it's just generated so much vibrant activism in the state of Arizona, activism that I haven't seen in the past. You know, I've been there for 10 years, and what I've been seeing since 2010 is amazing. Activism that is led by youth, by junior high, sometimes even elementary, but largely junior high and high school students who are demanding that their classes be protected, their ethnic studies classes be protected, and they want to go to school. It's very heartening to see this.
Okay, and lastly, what do you think is your future as a Chicana queer professor in Tucson, Arizona?
I'll continue to think about and write about and research about what's going on in Arizona, as I have been for the past couple of years. I feel like too many professors
who have tenure. I'm fortunate in that sense that I have tenure, which means that I have some academic freedom protections. But I would love to see more tenured professors use their tenure. I mean, tenure is supposed to protect faculty in, say, the commencement speech I gave, right? And it's supposed to protect us and our academic freedoms. Unfortunately, not enough tenured professors use their academic freedom to speak out against social wrongs. So I'm very lucky that I'm in a progressive department, the Gender and Women's Studies Department, even though my department isn't nominally ethnic studies. There are several of us on the faculty and our graduate students, our PhD students, who are invested in ethnic studies. And so we're a department that focuses on the intersections of gender and sexuality and race.
Okay, great. Is there anything else that you are just dying to get off your chest before we conclude the interview about yourself, the work you're doing in Arizona?
I'll just go back to what I mentioned a moment ago, which is it's really heartening and important to for us in Arizona, progressives in Arizona, to see that people are interested and care about what's happening in the state. And, of course, to recognize the all of the ways in which, as you said earlier, what's happening in Arizona is that especially in relation to the immigration law, impacts what happens in other states like Alabama. And so we're all very connected.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Si nos unimos, tendremos un mejor futuro. Hay que ayudarnos, hay que apoyarnos. Solo así conquistaremos. That's right.
All right, with us on the line, we have our own Indie Media Collective member, Nick Cooper.
How's it going?
Good, good, good. Just to let folks know that maybe don't know, Nick has been one of the leading forces behind the movement to try to stop the city from imposing this the sharing of food. And so we wanted to have Nick on. We've been trying to cover it as much as we can over the last two or three weeks. So with that, Nick, can you give us an update on where things are at with this whole proposed ordinance?
Yeah, well, the first draft of the ordinance basically had all kinds of rules, and the second draft of the ordinance made it real simple. Everything is optional except you have to have permission to serve anywhere in public, on somebody else's private property. Of course, you don't have to have permission to serve on your own property. That's still intact. But you have to get permission from the owner of public property. What that means, how you get permission, who you write for a permit, what the criteria are for being approved or denied, who knows? Not in the ordinance anymore. What the fines are for violating that, big mystery. You know, so there's a lot of things missing from this latest draft of the ordinance, so much so that we're kind of like thinking, you know, this is on life support right now. So what we need is for people to come out Tuesday and let's, you know, let's take this problematic law entirely off the books, right? Let's just get rid of this. You know, there's all kinds of things that the city and volunteer groups can do to improve homeless services. This law is not one of them. We don't need to be asking for permission. Oh, is it okay if we serve in front of the library? Is it okay if we serve in this park? You know, that's really not going to help anybody. And certainly, it puts this weird power in the hands of the government to say, you may not assemble here. And in fact, it's not only that we're going to tell you you can't assemble there. If you don't have written permission, you automatically can't assemble there. So Tuesday, we're going out to City Hall. We're going to have a picnic in the morning. We're going to show them how it's done, show them how people who share and care about each other get down with some food. And then we're going to go inside for the public session, and we're going to tell the city council members, you know, that it's time for this whole proposal to come all the way off the books. And a lot of people think the battle's over already. We've already won. That's not the case. But in a way, we are closer to winning than we usually find ourselves. And for that reason alone, people should come out and maybe we get a chance to have a victory together.
Hey, what time?
You know, those are too far and few and far between.
Yeah, I agree with that. What time should folks get to City Hall Tuesday?
Well, come down at 11,
okay,
and then we're having a picnic, and then we go for a press conference at 1, and then 1:30 is your last chance to sign up to speak, and then we go inside, and at 2 o'clock we start speaking, and we say, no new laws restricting sharing of food with the homeless. This is our privilege and our right to be able to do this. We live in a country where, you know, even though this country doesn't exactly take care of all its homeless, those of us who are doing it of our own accord, well, we should certainly not be interfered with.
Hey, Nick, and folks that want to keep up with the ongoing struggle and find out activities and events, where can they go to get the info, the latest?
Well, I think the easiest thing to say is if you go to Houston Keep Sharing Free on Facebook, you will find an incredible coalition of left and right and all kinds of groups. Houston Keep Sharing Free, we're a Facebook group.
And someone that maybe is hearing this for the first or second time or hasn't done much and they want to get involved, so besides the City Hall event, what else is going on? I know you guys had
a meeting tomorrow from 1 to 2 at Taft Street Coffee House. So come on down for that. You can come right now. I'm packing up the food and bringing it to Food Not Bombs. We'll be in front of the library tonight until 10 o'clock. Come share a vegetarian meal with us. Come to Ecclesia for a meeting tomorrow. Tuesday, we're down at City Hall. Facebook, we're at Houston Keep Sharing Free. And, this is a fun movement, and it's really neat to be part of this kind of coalition. So I think, you know, anybody would enjoy it. You don't have to be in homeless services to be part of this movement. We're just, you know, an ad hoc group that's coming together saying we don't want any laws restricting our right to go share food.
All right. Well, Nick, thanks a lot. I know you're busy with, FNB tonight. And hope that folks go to the Facebook page and keep up with what's going on.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. Peace.
Peace.
One shot to your heart without breaking your skin. No one has the power to hurt you like your kin. Kept it inside, didn't tell no one else. Didn't even wanna admit it to yourself. And now your chest burns and your back aches from 15 years of holding the pain. And now you only have yourself to blame if you continue to live this way.
Get it together.
You heal your body.
Get it together.
You have to heal your heart. Whatsoever you sow, you will reap.
All right, Houston, this is Courtney, and I'm talking to us a little bit about the healing that needs to go on, not just here in the city, but also nationally. For those of you who know and have been keeping up with the Trayvon Martin murder, there was a protest, a solidarity demonstration here in Houston on Monday, it was a good thing to see, and I just don't want us to forget that. Just like Trayvon, there have been several cases here in Houston, not just involving police, but involving security guards, involving child murders. So there's a lot to for people to want to mobilize around. John, talk to us.
Okay. Yeah, I think what, you know, Courtney, you and I were talking before the show, and one of the I guess tiny bits of our small issue within this larger picture is the claim by Zimmerman, who shot Trayvon, that he was beat up and his nose was broken. And you were telling me about your friend who recently had a broken nose and how bad they looked. But yet we see a video 30 minutes after the incident, you know, when the police had gotten him to the police station. And I guess I really didn't understand what a person with a broken nose should look like. But based on our conversation and your friend, certainly didn't look like a broken nose to me.
Yeah, one of the things, you know, that we were talking about was usually there was some, like, maybe there could be some bruising under the eyes or, like, bruising in the nose area, or at least if it wasn't enough time for bruising, definitely the swelling would already be there. So, you know, in the video that I saw, I didn't see any of that from Zimmerman. And again, I have to stress that, you know, there's a saying, a Mayan saying that's, you know, you are my other twin. We have to be able to see the humanity that's within each other,
right,
and be able to act compassionately.
Yeah, and not to try to, you know, I guess, analyze it from afar on TV. But I think another issue that maybe instigated this, and there's been some talk of it, is this whole idea of racial profiling.
Right. You know, and I think it's unfortunate. I think it does a huge disservice. You know, my background involves some of the, teachings that involve, that, are part of criminal justice. And, you know, people that have those kind of trainings are, trained to focus on, black and brown people, males specifically, from between the ages of 16 and 24, because those are the, you know, the bad people. And I think it's unfortunate that there's a whole, that's a quite a large group of people that are sort of, I think get less humanity, because they're expected to, be doing negative things when that isn't always the case.
Exactly. Yeah. I think too, you know, one of the most touching interviews that I heard was of a black mother who had a 19 or 20 year old son, and told of the story of him getting stopped by 30 times in a month. And, you know, it's hard for me to imagine someone basically on an average getting stopped once a day because they're black, because they're male, because they're young. And I guess I didn't even realize that this whole social expectations of, you know, young black men and how you have to act and how you have to be aware of how you act in this society. You know, to me, that's just a real problem and a real issue that we have, is overcoming these stereotypes that you're young, you're black, you're male, and then it just gets really worse if somehow you don't fit into this preconceived notion of what you should look like. And I think that it inspires, or should inspire, or motivate the rest of us to carry on a struggle to end those kinds of ideas and end that ideology that perpetuates stereotyping, prejudging folks. All right, and with that, we're going to end it this evening. Make way for our comrades at Voices at Work. So that does it for another week here on our show. Thanks to everyone that contributed content to tonight's broadcast. Of course, a shout out to Courtney, our board op, for the revolution. And I'm signing off, reminding everyone out there, don't hate the media, be the media. Peace.